Welcome to Friday. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. It's okay. We're going to talk in a moment anyway. We can talk now.
We can talk over you?
Yeah, we can. You can talk over me, sure. I'm just Bill Radke. It's not about me. It's about my guests for the next hour on the Week in Review. Joni Balter, host of Civic Cocktail on Seattle Channel. Sydney Brownstone, a reporter at The Stranger. John Carlson talks on the radio. You're on the wrong radio station, son.
You got confused.
KVI, radio program of record in the Puget Sound.
KVI in Seattle. Good to have all of you. Thank you.
Or not.
Or not. We'll discuss. And we want to hear from you, listener. We are live tweeting the show, so talk to us using the hashtag KUOWWIR. That's Week in Review, KUOWWIR. Get in on our Facebook page, KUOW Public Radio. Send us an email if that's better, weekinreview@kuow.org. And maybe I can read some of your comments on the air. I know you're going to want to say something to John Carlson, so bring it on.
Every once in a while. It happens. I'll say something that somehow seems controversial here that doesn't on KVI.
Yeah, how about that? Let's talk. We were talking the Week in Review. We got to talk about what happened this week with the Federal Appeals Court ruling against the president's immigration ban yesterday, to which President Trump tweeted, "See you in court," all caps, to which Washington's Governor Jay Inslee replied,
"I just saw a tweet from the president. He said, see you in court. Well, Mr. President, we just saw you in court, and we beat you. And you ought to think about this, because these courts have said this is unconstitutional, and it will not stand. And we're hopeful that that happens. If it doesn't, Washington State's going to continue this fight."
Inslee to Trump, "We beat you." Now, to make sure you're caught up, listeners, Washington State sued the Trump administration, saying its ban on immigrants and refugees from certain countries violates constitutional due process and equal protection and discriminates against Muslims and hurts Washington State and does not clearly make America safer. Yesterday, the appeals judges ruled unanimously, one of them a Bush appointee, that Washington State does at least have a case. So the travel ban stays on hold. The case could go to the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll talk about that. Today, President Trump said he has no doubt he'll win in court, and he promised additional security steps coming rapidly. Sydney Brownstone, will Trump just fix his executive order and move on?
That's a good question. I think his administration is reviewing whether they want to take the appeal all the way up to the Supreme Court. But they've already lost twice, so I'm not sure that would be a good idea. And I'd be curious to understand how they could scrap the executive order and start all over again if, when the merits are reviewed in federal court, the court finds that this was motivated by religious discrimination. And based on Rudy Giuliani's comments on Fox News, that may well have been the case. I mean, Rudy Giuliani went on Fox and said, "I'll tell you the story. President Trump asked me how to do a Muslim ban legally, and this is what we came up with." So I don't know how you could start a new executive order with the same motivation. That's fundamentally unconstitutional.
John, do you agree that there's no way that Trump, or maybe even if it's a law, Congress could write these travel restrictions in a way that get around his past comments about Muslim bans?
Sure. Yeah, sure he can. And that's what he should do, because, you know, how many times did we hear this growing up, usually from our dads, but from mom, too, on occasion? If you're going to do something, do it right. And they just didn't do this right from the very get-go. It was hastily put together. It was rolled out abruptly. I mean, it was basically the Trump White House was all on board, and the Trump administration was not. And so you had all sorts of chaos. You had chaos in the countries of origin being mentioned. You had chaos at American airports. You had people assuming the worst. Oh, my God, it's a ban on Muslims. They jump into their Priuses and Subarus and head to the airport to demonstrate. And, you know, then they come to...
I have a Prius, sir. Yes. At long last, have you no decency?
But the bottom line on this, you know, Bill, is, you know, they just didn't do it right from the get-go. Then when it came to defending this in court... I mean, no wonder they lost. Judge Robart asked Michelle Bennet, "Do you know of any terrorists from any of these seven nations that are on this list?" Her answer was, "I don't know. I'm from the civil division."
Hmm.
Okay, now that is not what I would call a compelling answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
oh, really, John?
And then when it goes to the Ninth Circuit, the same question comes up. And the litigant there, or the attorney there, who was so inept that the talk between conservatives and legal circles afterwards was, is this guy just incompetent or did he tank it? Was he didn't know either. So
you're just talking about incompetence and not the underlying wisdom of the immigration and refugee restrictions.
I'm just saying, regardless of the policy itself, this is how to do things the wrong way. And that is why I think I'll say for the first and last time in the next 4 years that Donald Trump should take Jay Inslee's advice. He should pull these executive orders. He should rewrite them. For heaven's sakes, they had their White House counsel amending the executive order. And the judges said, you can't.
Yeah.
The White House counsel is not the president.
This isn't an etch-a-sketch board here. It's not.
Yeah,
yeah, you're not the president.
You don't get to start over. Yeah.
So before we even get to the constitutional questions, which are, I think are far different and I think would trend in Trump's direction if it went to the Supreme Court, he's just better off redoing it and doing it right. And if they want to tighten vetting procedures, great.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that, too, how great that is. Joni.
So I'm just observing how Washington State and Seattle are the center of the known universe in the last few weeks in terms of the public officials just having a wee of a time. They're like the opposition, it seems, like to the whole administration. Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, apparently lives on CNN. I don't know if he goes home very often. But this state and our companies and our public officials have just been on a fascinating roll in challenging things that are coming out of Washington, D.C. We're doing
Amazon signed on.
Amazon signed on.
Microsoft.
Expedia. Microsoft. I mean, is
Howard Schultz.
And Howard Schultz, in his own way, saying that he's going to hire all these refugees that are coming here.
No. There's 75 countries around the world.
Right.
Not coming here. 75 countries around the world, he'll hire 10,000 refugees.
Right. Right. So just everybody's jumped into this to be part of it. It's fascinating.
You think it's in Washington's bones?
I think it's in the water if you think about it, because if you go back, especially on a matter like immigration, if you go back in time to Governor Dan Evans and the Vietnamese refugees, they were coming into San Diego. These are folks who had worked for the U.S. government during the war. And California, then Governor Jerry Brown said, no, you're not coming to California. Dan Evans interceded and said, you can come to Washington.
That was wonderful.
It does appear to be in our sort of tradition and in our history.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Governor Brown? From the internment camps, you know? I think that a lot of people, especially the Jewish communities, have been on watch during Donald Trump's campaign, and we've been saying never again because we've been very conscious of our history. And I wonder if part of the reason why Washington is standing up to the Trump administration is because it's in our recent history and an ugly history of imprisoning people based on their national origin.
You want to be careful on that, Sydney, because it was precisely because we discriminated on behalf of people's religion that we brought in 100,000 Jewish refugees after the Second World War.
Are you familiar with the St. Louis, the vessel of the St. Louis that was turned away at the U.S. border in 1939?
Yes.
A lot of those people later died in concentration camps.
Right. Once again, under U.S. immigration law, we discriminated on behalf of a religion in order to bring Jews to this country after World War II. And throughout the 70s and 80s, of course, we took Jewish refugees from Russia, Russian Jews.
Is that the equivalent? Is favoring one religion the equivalent of disfavoring another?
It's discriminating on behalf of a religion. Sure.
So, Sydney, are you saying that you think because you've been following this through the courts, does it sound like the president could craft an executive order that limits or at least pauses immigration and refugee resettlement, but does it in a way that there's due process, there's equal protection, there's no establishment of religion violation? Do you think that's doable?
Well, obviously the president has broad executive powers granted to him by both Congress and the Constitution. However, on this question of drafting an executive order that would limit immigration specifically from these countries, based on the motivations that we've seen during his campaign, I want to go back to John's point earlier. He said that he thinks this would trend in the Trump administration's favor if brought to the Supreme Court. I want to counter that with a brief filed by 10 former national security officials who said that an executive order like this that temporarily bans people from these countries and bans refugees ultimately undermines the national safety of the United States rather than making us safer. And because it bans people from these Muslim majority countries that are oftentimes in a state of internal conflict and chaos, left in place, the executive order will likely feed the recruitment narrative of ISIL and other extremists that portray the United States as at war with Islam. You know, and actually, Rukmini Kalamachi, a correspondent for The New York Times, who has been in Baghdad, has been on the ground. She says that people over there, extremists, are calling this executive order the blessed ban because it plays right into their hands.
Sydney, that's an argument, just not a constitutional one.
How is that not a constitutional argument?
That's a pure political argument. It's not a good policy. It'll do more than harm than good. A constitutional argument is,
That make it invalid? Or
no.
Okay.
No, it might make it bad policy if they're right. But constitutionally, does the Constitution allow the president to do that? That's a legal argument.
Well, the federal courts have to find whether the motivation for this executive order is rationally based. That's one of the lowest levels of scrutiny under judicial review. So in his courtroom, Judge James Robart asked DOJ's Michelle Bennett, do you know whether any of these citizens have been arrested on domestic terrorism charges? And when she said she didn't know, his whole point was that he had to find it rationally based. He had to find whether it was based in fact or fiction. And this briefing goes to that question.
Well, and he said the answer is no. The answer is zero. And the judge had it wrong, by the way. Over 20 terrorists in just the last couple of years have been
not in fatal.
Yeah.
Well, in terrorist activity. Okay, I'm going to pause, but not killed.
I'm going to use my discretion to pause because what the court is arguing about now is whether the temporary restraining order on this executive order is going to be in place for now, which it is. So we're all going to watch this go through the courts and or back through the Trump administration. So we'll have plenty of time to talk about both the legality and the political wisdom of this policy. Joni, you wanted to say something?
I just wanted to add to the discussion, not into this one, have fun with that. I just wanted to add the importance of the judicial branch, which is one of the things that this whole episode brings up. And it felt to me like, you know, Donald Trump was waving the red cape, muleta, whatever you want to call it, in front of the bull and telling the judiciary that, you know, that you're a third branch of government and you don't really matter. That's what kings say, not presidents.
Yeah. John, I wonder what you think of that the Trump has repeatedly called out judges. In fact, he said if there were to be a terrorist attack, we should blame Seattle federal judge James Robart and the court system. Is that the kind of American president you want?
It just doesn't help Donald Trump. It doesn't help his administration. It doesn't help his argument.
And what about our
democracy?
And
it doesn't make sense either.
Yeah, I mean, he, by taking a shot at Robart and saying he's a so-called judge. Well, go ahead and criticize his opinion. Tear it to shreds if you want. But don't go after the legitimacy, of the judge. Don't.
This
is
not the first time that he's gone against the legitimacy of a judge on a ruling he doesn't like.
Yeah, no. Well, if you really think about it, if you really think about
government,
if you really think about it, no, it's not. If you really think about it,
yes, it is.
It's Donald Trump always criticizes personally rather than politically. He'd be better off going after the opinion, not the person.
But here's my question for you, John. On that topic, we knew this about Donald Trump. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it's a surprise to you that he would say something like that about a federal judge. It's certainly not to me. And I wonder, do you think, you said it's bad for Donald Trump, but do you think it's significantly, it doesn't help him, but do you think it is a significant threat to our system, to our democracy?
No.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Why do you think that Trump critics should chill out on that kind of rhetoric, that he's a dangerous American president, just by attacking
dangerous
a third
American
branch
president
of the government?
What has he been saying? See you in court. Wasn't that his latest
that's
tweet?
That's true.
See you in court.
That's one of his latest tweets.
That's some tyrant. See you in court.
Okay, so we have a little of this and a little of that.
That to a court.
No,
we can pick statements. You're right on this side and that side. But overall, I'm just curious. Can I generically call you a supporter of President Trump? Right.
Well. again, I like the overall direction he's set for the country, but man, he's making it a wild ride.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that way because he just keeps, again, making trouble for himself.
For himself, but I'm trying to
and
get...
And his administration.
Yeah, and his administration, but not. But you're not concerned about, oh man, what have we done? Sure, any Republican, but not... Because some of your fellow Republicans
really,
are saying...
Do I think he means it? Do I think he really means he's not a real judge and I don't have to follow him? No, of course not.
Uh-huh. Okay, it's not a legitimacy
problem. I just think it's being Donald
Trump. Yeah.
But it is absolutely amateur hour back there. These are a lot of people who don't know the rules, don't care about the rules, and don't appear to know what they're doing.
Well, let's talk some more about, because there's no shortage this week of not only President Trump, I suppose, controversies, but Seattle involvement in that. So let's talk. We've just talked about Washington State versus Donald J. Trump. In a moment, let's talk about Nordstrom versus Ivanka Trump and more on The Week in Review. Continuing now with KOW's Week in Review, I'm Bill Radke. John Carlson from KVI Radio. How's it going so far, John?
I think it's going wonderful. How do you think?
Great, great. And I want to hear more with you and Joni Balter from Civic Cocktail on Seattle Channel, Sydney Brownstone, reporter at The Stranger, and you, the listener. We're live tweeting the show, and the hashtag for this show is KUOWWIR. Week in Review. Facebook page, KUOW Public Radio. Our email is weekinreview@kuow.org. So get in on it, and maybe we'll make you a part of the conversation. Did you know? Did you even know that Nordstrom sold Ivanka Trump clothes?
Absolutely.
Joni. Yeah. Yes, I did. Apparently, it's for the modern young working woman.
So I actually am one of the customers who didn't realize I was setting a trend. My shoe fell off downtown, and it kind of flew away, and I was walking in the actual wet. And so I thought, well, I got to replace these shoes because they keep falling off. And I go into Nordstrom looking for a sale, and there's this beautiful black flat Ivanka shoe next to this sort of uglier shoe.
You thought about it, didn't you?
With the string. And I really kind of wanted the Ivanka, but I just couldn't do it. So I walked out with the uglier shoe.
Okay. Well,
so I am a trendsetter.
Yes. Yes,
didn't
you
know
are.
Didn't know everybody was behind me kind of going, well, that was a cool thing to do. I'll do the same.
Nordstrom saw Joni Balter's decision and
just went with it.
And went with it. Here's what happened. Nordstrom has carried the Ivanka line for a few years now, but they've announced they'll stop carrying it, not for political reasons. They went out of their way to say. Nordstrom says it just wasn't selling well enough. President Trump, though, seemed to suggest that Nordstrom is lying about that because he tweeted that Nordstrom's treating his daughter unfairly. I know he understands business, but he thinks his daughter's being treated unfairly, and Trump's press secretary, Sean Spicer, defended Trump's comment along those lines.
This is a direct attack on his policies and her name. So there's clearly an attempt for him to stand up for her because she is being maligned because they have a problem with his policies.
And then
Bill,
Trump...
I think that was Melissa McCarthy.
That was...
totally.
That was
Melissa.
From last Saturday night.
Yeah. That's a pretty good SNL skit.
That was
pretty
like good, the right? Best in 5 years.
I watched it
I'd
four
say.
Times.
I heard that President Trump, I don't know if this is true, that he was mad because a woman played his press secretary.
Yeah,
I have no idea whether that's
true. The things that drive
true.
The presidency these days are things you wouldn't really think of.
Yeah. Google that, listener, if you haven't seen it, Melissa McCarthy, SNL. So then the final piece of this is that President Trump's advisor, Kellyanne Conway, went on Fox News from the White House briefing room, right, and criticized retailers who do take political jabs at the president's family, especially a female member of his family.
I do find it ironic that you've got some executives all over the internet bragging about what they've done to her and her line, and yet they're using the most prominent woman in Donald Trump's most prominent, she's his daughter, and they're using her, who's been a champion for women empowerment, women in the workplace, to get to him. So I think people can see through that. Go buy Ivanka's stuff is what I would say. I'm gonna get. I hate shopping. I'm gonna go get some on myself today.
Go buy Ivanka's stuff, Joni Balter. She said. Conway even said she was giving Ivanka a free commercial. It was extremely explicit, and that appears to violate a federal ban on public employees using their office to endorse products. The White House says Conway has been counseled, which is not the same as punished.
So I love how they've spent the whole day here talking about how she's not going to lose her job, which means they are talking about whether or not she should lose her job. That's how this works. Amateur hour over there. I mean, you should read the ethics rules before you open your mouth. You should know the ethics rules before you take office. You know, that whole Christmas season when you have time to sit back and read things? That's one of the things you should read. She did not. Seems like she violated every rule you can think of there.
But, John, do you think that the American public gives a whit about whether Kellyanne Conway observes the federal ethics rules? Should they? Should we?
I do, and yes, we should, but no, they don't.
Okay.
I think there's two different issues at play here. I'm actually going to give Donald Trump a pass for defending his daughter on Twitter for one reason. She's his daughter. Back in December of 1950, Margaret Truman played a recital, a concert at Constitution Hall. And the Washington Post's music critic went and wrote a snarky review in, well, back in 1950s parlance, snarky review. He was just basically, you know, being a jerk about it. And President Harry Truman sent him a letter, and they still have this letter today. He threatened to blacken the reporter's eyes, kick him in the groin, said, you know, made other unsavory comments about him. And the letter went public, and there was, you know, is it presidential for a president to threaten to physically assault someone because he criticized his daughter's singing? And Harry Truman's response is, you know, maybe it wasn't presidential, but every dad in the country's on my side. And so I give him a pass for defending his daughter. I think Kellyanne got carried away. I think she was defending Ivanka, but you don't do that kind of thing from the White House. And yes, I am going to buy Ivanka Trump for Valentine's Day for my wife.
Well, better hurry.
You better hurry because they're running out of supplies, I have a feeling, because they're not reordering. You know, I get that, what you're saying, the whole dad thing. But this is a president and an administration that has not separated itself enough from its business ties. So it's not like the context, you know, here really does matter. So they, Donald and Kellyanne, are using their office to promote her brand when they haven't separated themselves, haven't shown their tax records. They haven't done the things that you should do to let us know you're more concerned about running the country than you are about your benefiting from your various businesses. Concede the point, John. Go ahead.
They were not going out of their way to do this. They were answering a question in terms of Kellyanne Conway. She didn't go out of her way to just do this. It wasn't a press statement. She was asked about it in the course of an interview, and she should have said, oh, don't say something like that from this platform.
And then she went out of her way to say, I'm going to give you a free commercial. But the thing about Trump and his daughter, Ivanka, I think it's intellectually dishonest to claim that this is just about a father-daughter relationship. When your daughter is sitting in on meetings with high-ranking international officials and advising your policies, when her husband is also advising your policies, she's not just a daughter, she's a member of your administration. And as such, is fair game for political comment and critique.
Sydney Nordstrom pointed out that it was founded by an immigrant. This was in response to the travel ban.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that Nordstrom had no political motivation when it pulled Ivanka Trump's clothing line?
Well, it's in Nordstrom's interest to say that they had no political motivation, that this was purely motivated by poor sales.
Why is that in their interest? Why not take a stand?
Well, you know, it's in any business's interest to try and not to alienate some of their consumer base, I suppose. But to that, I would say that I don't think it's possible to be an apolitical business like Nordstrom in this political climate. Like, how can you claim to be apolitical when the pursuit of profit so motivates so much of our politics, right? And this is an instance where a policy affected by the president was threatening the values of their company and threatening the feelings of inclusiveness and the fact that they have a diverse workforce and immigrants who work there. So they said that in a memo to their employees. And also, I mean, if this is also a curious, I think, natural experiment about the power of boycotts. I'm curious as to whether the Grab Your Wallet campaign directly affected Ivanka's poor sales.
The other thing is that where are Nordstrom stores located, folks? They're located in big cities.
And suburbs, you're right. Yeah.
Big, blue, politically Democratic-leaning cities. So whereas many other sort of tweets about companies, including Boeing, which is another moment for Washington State, where sometimes a tweet from the Trump administration would maybe hurt those companies, Nordstrom does business in big cities and suburbs, that's fair, but they tend to lean Democratic. And so the Nordstrom stock went up. So it was kind of funny how this one was just completely different response than the other.
And some people guessed that Nordstrom was being political even when Nordstrom said it wasn't being political.
Right, but also 3 days earlier, they had sent out a memo to their employees about the travel ban, reminding folks that they were Swedish immigrants and that they valued the work of their immigrant employees. So, you know, they probably believe everything we just said.
Do you think people even know that that Nordstrom is a Seattle company? Most people, I mean, even newcomers here, I think people are barely aware. Does Nordstrom feel like a Seattle company? Well, Sydney, you've been here the least amount of time for many of us. Like, it's an institution to us.
I had no idea it was a Seattle company before I came here. I just figured it was a national chain.
There you go.
Amorphous like that. Mm-hmm. My bad.
No, I remember when it was Nordstrom Best. So, yeah. Mm. Very much Seattle, but do most people think of it that way? Probably not.
Yeah. They are just as likely to call it Nordstrom's.
That's right.
Or as Skip calls Boeing, Boeing.
Boeing. Yeah. Boeing, Boeing, Boeing. By the way, the Ivanka brand, manufactured in China and Indonesia and Vietnam.
I think
no
you
surprise
meant China.
There, right?
China.
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 Or China.
Yeah.
Okay. So we did get a little note here from a listener that helping yourself is not what the presidency is about. John, this listener, Catherine, wants to know about this shift of emphasis, she thinks, in the executive branch. Do you worry about a Trump attitude of, yeah, I'm going to defend my daughter, but we're also going to defend our brand, and we're not going to pull apart all of our conflicts of interest. You're a Trump fan. Are you troubled by the president's attitude? Do you think he's got a self-centered attitude instead of an America First attitude, so to speak?
No, I think he's got an America First attitude. I think his chief goal is to get the economy going again. The big difference between this administration
was it ongoing?
Yes, it was.
Oh.
For if you're wondering why Donald Trump is president and why the blue wall crumbled, is because the economy that we all love here in Seattle is not being felt in much of the rest of the country. The last president we had was the first since Herbert Hoover to never attain 3% economic growth. So that's what he wants to do, is get the economy going to where it hits 3%, 4%, 5% growth. I don't know if it hits 7 like it did in Reagan's time, but it can get a whole lot better.
So but you know what I'm getting at, the sort of
people who build companies. That's the problem with Obama. They had smart people from government, smart people from academia, smart people from Wall Street, not enough men and women who actually built companies. And that's what I think we need, men and women in the administration who are crafting economic policy, who helped build companies.
Yeah, but a little different from that is what Catherine, writing to us at Week in Review at KUOW.org, is seeing as an executive who is self-centered, right? Thin-skinned, self-interested.
Self-aggrandized.
Self-self-self. And I just, as a Trump fan, I want to know, are you troubled by any of that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I support Donald Trump in spite of some of his faults, and it's very fair. I think she hit three targets. I think those are three faults of Donald Trump.
Yeah. Okay, more of KOW's Week in Review to come. We had Seattle acting against a bank that helps to fund the Dakota Access Pipeline. We have a meme around Elizabeth Warren and, you know, whispers of 2020. And if we have a chance, I'd like to bring in little Marco, some comments that Senator Rubio made about civility, and he sees a danger in America's ability to understand one another and get anything done together. So we've got some more Week in Review for you coming up. Stranger reporter Sydney Brownstone, Civic Cocktail host Joni Balter, KVI radio host John Carlson wandered in here, and we let him stay on this radio station for a little bit.
Yes.
Yes.
It's nice having, 2-minute commercial breaks. Nice.
On KOW's Week in Review. Continuing this week, Seattle became the first city in this country to cut ties with Wells Fargo because of the bank's funding of a Dakota Access pipeline. Wells Fargo invests in the pipeline, invests in the company building it. The bank has handled about $3 billion a year from the city. Joni, is the city sacrificing anything by this move?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that, you know, this is a city that likes to make statements about what it's doing. Some of the council members voted because they didn't like the connection to the Dakota Access Pipeline, but some of them voted because of the underlying business practices, all those phony accounts that this bank was engaging in.
There was a financial scandal at Wells Fargo.
Well, they were opening accounts in people's
names. Opening accounts in people's names.
$2 million.
That weren't real. So fake alt accounts, I guess, those. And so, you know, the Seattle City Council loves to get out there and kind of exclaim what it's doing and what it stands for. I wasn't surprised by this in any way. And I think that there are local banks that can do the same work. So
yeah. But John, you say beware of social investing.
Well, yeah, this decision is not a flare, but the concern to keep an eye out on is once you empower government bodies to use political criteria when it comes to economic decisions, investment decisions, you can just see some politicians are eyeing pension funds. And boy, wouldn't it be nice if we could use that for social investing? Wouldn't it be nice if we can apply progressive criteria to how we manage people's money? And that's a no-no in my book. I mean, I think that when you're managing people's money, you get the best rate of return. You don't make political decisions for them. I think if people wish to make those decisions with their own money, great. I don't want to see government go down that road.
But I don't think they were doing that.
No, they weren't.
Saying,
I said
this is who we bank
the
with.
The precedent could
like
lead
it.
There is
we
my concern.
Like
Sydney, you agree? Is that socially responsible investing? Does that make you feel hinky?
No, and I think it's interesting that John thinks that we shouldn't apply political criteria to economic decisions when that's what politicians do every single day. I mean, that's why Donald Trump, for example, is not regulating Wall Street because several members of his administration are high-ranking Wall Street execs, right? But in regards to socially responsible banking, I think we have a responsibility as a city to put our money where our mouth is, right? And Seattle has come under fire many times for making resolutions that people say are just political in nature and don't actually take any real action. But what we see here in Seattle by pulling our relationship with Wells Fargo is an action that could actually inspire other actions in other cities. And we've already seen that in Davis, California. Yeah, $124 million relationship with Wells Fargo, similar ordinances are being considered in Philadelphia and Minneapolis. And I think that this could send a message to the banking industry that you can't get away with this stuff anymore. Right?
But it won't stop the pipeline, right?
At this point, it looks like the courts are the only thing that could stop the pipeline. But in terms of socially responsible banking, this goes back to Joni's point earlier, like these types of skeevy business practices about creating 2 million unauthorized accounts, like the American people aren't going to bank with you if that's your practice.
I think you can always stand up for ethical leadership of businesses and public institutions. I don't think that's a big leap in anything.
Because you're saying it's unethical to fund the pipeline? Or
no,
are you talking about the accounting scandal,
that too,
which is different?
But the underlying reason, one of the underlying reasons, as I said, had to do with what kind of a bank this is and the lengths it would go to be creepy, right? So they didn't want to do business with him. I think we can require ethics in business and public institutions.
Last word, John, before we move.
Ethics, yes, there is a difference. Sydney's point about, of course, we apply political criteria to money all the time when politicians make decisions. Absolutely correct. What I'm talking about, Sydney, is when you start using political criteria with people's money, not tax revenue that's been gathered from people, but their portfolios, their pensions. That, I think, has to be sacrosanct and should be outside politics.
But we have like a very large socially responsible investment sector. I mean, there are a number of investment organizations that do just that. And I think people increasingly are looking to put their pension funds in places that don't fund evil.
What if Seattle put that up to a vote? Would you feel okay with it?
No, because we're talking about an employee's money. Look, I have a 401k. If I choose to have it handled by one of Sydney's socially responsible investment companies, great. That's my decision. But if I have a defined benefit pension that the government is handling for me, then I expect the government to be getting the best rate of return, not using political criteria that they think should be guiding my pension.
John Carlson, Sydney Brownstone, Joni Balter with you on KOW's Week in Review. I want to talk about the, you know, the Democrats don't have the presidency. They don't have Congress. They don't have the Supreme Court. But they do have a hero today in Elizabeth Warren. The Democratic Massachusetts senator stood up to oppose the nomination of Senator Jeff Sessions to U.S. Attorney General. Warren read out loud from a letter that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s widow, Coretta Scott King, wrote back in the 80s when Sessions was up for a federal judgeship.
Mr. Sessions' conduct as U.S. attorney, from his politically motivated voting fraud prosecutions to his indifference toward criminal violations of civil rights laws, indicates that he lacks the temperament, fairness, and judgment to be a federal judge.
As Senator Warren's reading that letter, Montana Republican Steve Daines cuts her off.
A person who has exhibited so much hostility to the enforcement of those laws.
The senator is reminded that it is a violation of Rule 19 of the standing rules of the Senate to impute to another senator or senators any conduct or motive unworthy or becoming a senator.
Unbecoming of a senator, I think he meant. To which Senator Warren replies, these are not my words.
Mr. President, I don't think I quite understand. I'm reading a letter from Coretta Scott King to the Judiciary Committee from 1986 that was admitted into the record. I'm simply reading what she wrote.
Well, her argument didn't work. The Republican leadership told Warren to take her seat. The full Senate voted against her on party lines. And so Senator Warren was no longer allowed to speak until Jeff Sessions was confirmed, which he was. In other words, Warren lost. Except when the Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told reporters why he silenced Senator Warren, he said she was warned, she was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted. Sydney, how did that phrase hit some women? Will you speak for all of those women?
Oh, I definitely can't speak for all women. But personally, when I was listening to that segment, I just had like this flashback. And Joni, I'm curious if you've experienced this too, of like all the times I've been told that I need to adjust my bedside manner when I'm being direct or expressing my opinion in a polite but firm way.
But that's not what the Republican leadership said, though, right? They said she was warned about the rules she was violating, and nevertheless, she persisted.
Right, which is the clearest example I can think of a double standard for men and women exercising their opinions, right? But again, I think it's important to note that Elizabeth Warren is still a white woman, so she can be labeled as being unbecoming and hysterical. But, you know, additionally, women of color, black women in particular, are often labeled angry on top of it when they express their opinions like this.
So sort of the story of my life, but I want to
pause and let listeners know that in case we didn't highlight it, the phrase, nevertheless, she persisted, is now a meme. It's T-shirts. It's videos. It's a thing.
It's probably baseball caps.
Sorry to interrupt.
No.
It's baseball caps.
No. So I personally admire Senator Warren, but I do think I understand what happened here, and I'm not justifying it. I think that she had a big preamble before this happened. There was a big windup to it. A lot of the senators find her annoying. She's frequently, you know, lecturing, admonishing, all of that good stuff. But I do think it's just plain weird then to the next day to let the male senators get up and say pretty much the same thing, minus the preamble.
They started quoting from Coretta
Scott King.
Quoting
the exact same letter. So they sort of empowered her by, you know, the whole event ends up making Elizabeth Warren, who they were trying to say, could you turn it down just a teeny bit? They made her bigger and stronger than she was before she tried to do this.
Is she strong, John? Stronger than ever?
Boy, I tell you, if she is, and this helps her get the nomination in 2020, what a bonus. What a great thing.
Well, you're the one jumping ahead to 2020. She was just talking about Jeff Sessions.
Yeah,
if you want to
I would give her
it.
A donation if it would make her the Democratic nominee.
And nobody said she's the nominee.
Look, first of all, how relevant really is gender? If Bernie Sanders had done exactly...
He could be annoying, too, if you...
That's why I'm bringing him up. If Bernie Sanders had said exactly what Elizabeth Warren had, and had pulled the same trick, which is what it was. It was a trick. She was impugning a senator through someone else's words rather than her own because she knew she'd get flagged immediately for it.
Will you explain why it was out of bounds with the criticism of a U.S. Attorney General nominee?
You are not permitted, and this goes back to 1902, because a fist fight broke out on the floor of the Senate and other senators got hit trying to break it up, and so they passed this rule. And it's rarely been invoked, but you cannot impugn the character of a fellow senator on the floor of the Senate. And that includes reading words from someone else rather than speaking them yourself. So my point here is if Bernie Sanders had done exactly what Elizabeth Warren had, he would have been flagged. The same thing would have happened.
You're working in a purely hypothetical scenario, and this is always what happens when we bring up sexism, right? There's some guy that says, well, if a man did this, he would be treated exactly the same way. And by doing that, you're dismissing the lived experiences of every woman who has ever gone through the same thing, who are telling you this is a real phenomenon.
What evidence do you have?
What evidence do you have, John? Have you ever been a woman?
Yes. The bottom.
Really?
No.
Just last week.
The bottom line.
That'll be our next segment on the Week in Review.
Maybe I'll say I'll self-identify. Later. But the bottom line is she did not get flagged because she's a woman. She did not get flagged for raising her voice.
You don't think that gender played any role in this, despite the fact that the United States just elected one of the most openly sexist candidates in the history of the United States?
What's that got to do with a floor discussion
on
the Senate? This needs to be very clear.
She's persisting.
I'm persisting.
And so am I.
I'm persisting more than you.
Hey, guys, can
she
our listeners often want me?
Rule.
Our listeners often want to know that we like each other. So can we just say right now whether we like each other?
And then continue?
Okay.
But
actually were hanging out and having fun in the green room about a half an hour ago.
Yeah,
so we like each other. Go on.
But to the rule, I want to say that there is some gray area here because Elizabeth Warren was not trashing in the Senate a fellow senator exactly just pure like that. She was trashing someone who was nominated for a cabinet position, and they are discussing the qualifications or lack thereof in the middle of that.
While he was a senator. If he was a former senator, fine. But again, that is how the rules, operate in the Senate. And maybe the rules are stuffy, and maybe they're arcane, and maybe they should go. But this idea that a man wouldn't have been flagged like that. Oh, yes, a man would have.
Okay, so we're stuck in the hypothetical universe, so I'm going to pause there for a moment because we're talking about liking each other and stuff and civility, and that's our the final topic I want to get to. After this Senator Warren Sessions little dust-up, the Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida got up and made a plea for civility.
We are becoming a society incapable of having debates anymore. In this country, if you watch the big policy debates that are going on in America, no one ever stops to say, I think you're wrong, I understand your point of view, I get it, you have some valid points, but let me tell you why I think my view is better. I don't hear that anymore. Here's what I hear almost automatically, and let me be fair, from both sides of these debates. Immediately, Immediately, as soon as you offer an idea, the other side jumps and says, the reason why you say that is because you don't care about poor people, because you only care about rich people, because you're this or you're that or you're the other. And I'm just telling you guys, we are reaching a point in this republic where we're not going to be able to solve the simplest of issues, because everyone is putting themselves in a corner where everyone hates everybody. Now, I don't pretend to say that I am not myself from time to time in heated debates outside of this forum. Been guilty of perhaps hyperbole, and for those, I'm not proud of it. But I got to tell you, I think what's at stake here tonight and as we debate moving forward is not simply some rule, but the ability of the most important nation on earth to debate in a productive and respectful way the pressing issues before us.
Sidney, you're not going to respond by calling Marco Rubio a filthy Republican hypocrite, are you?
Those are your words.
Good. I didn't think so.
Yeah. I do think that there is some hypocrisy involved, however, when Marco Rubio is making calls for civility after his party has elected someone who has so openly disgraced the notion of civility in politics. And I also think that part of the reason you get a response like that from Senator Elizabeth Warren and from women who are tweeting around this hashtag, nevertheless, she persisted, is because they feel like their rights are being disrespected, that they're being shut up. And I don't think the silencing of women in a public sphere like that is civil.
So then how do we go forward with the feeling, if you don't like the feeling that people have their backs up against the wall, they feel silenced, then what? So this senator is saying, we've got to chill, we've got to come down, we've got to quit calling hypocrite, that doesn't get us anywhere, et cetera, et cetera. What do you do? What's your solution?
I think the onus is on the people who have had the power to listen. People like Marco Rubio, like men in positions of power, to recognize that power and sit back and listen more.
John?
I'm just
the gentlewoman from KVI is called upon for a response.
Yes. I was just sitting back and listening.
Yes, you were. Are you concerned with a lack of civility or not?
As a country, are we going to get beyond this? Sure. I have full confidence we will.
What gives you that?
Huh?
What gives you that?
Believe it or not, it's been worse. You look at some of what was happening in this country and here in the Seattle area in the 60s and 70s. It got kind of it got ugly. And if you go further back in history, it got really ugly. But I think that Marco Rubio's point is correct. You know, if you and I've seen this especially in the Seattle area, you know, as a conservative, where if you disagree with someone on welfare, well, you don't have a different view. You're not wrong. You just hate poor people. You disagree on a religious liberty question. Well, you hate women. You disagree on affirmative action. Well, you hate minorities. You hate people of color. It always gets personal. It always gets intense. And the reason for that is that debate and discussion are being sabotaged. Calling someone a name or going to their motives is a way of shutting down a conversation, not a way of fostering it. So Marco Rubio is correct. We do need a whole lot more discussion. We need to get to know each other a little bit more. We need to get beyond the shallow stereotypes we have of each other that I think are dominating the political debate today.
So I say
this
amen.
Is why I bring you together.
I say amen to much of that. I love Marco's call for civility. I do think it matters what the person at the top is doing. Our president is big on name calling, and you know everyone has a name before their name. Failing New York Times, you know, awful CNN, lying everybody, this that. So it does need to come from the top. And also, you know, I don't know what high school everybody here went to, but if you throw a spitball, you're not the one that goes throw the spitball and then say peace. I mean, you have to sort of own that for a second or two, and then you can say, wow, I'm sorry I did that. We shouldn't do that. Let's all do something different.
How did you react to the Seattle restaurant? Was it Capitol Hill, St. John's restaurant with the sandwich board making fun of the new education secretary. It says that it's this is viral. This a sign, chalk art sign that says "Congratulations, Betsy," but "Congratulations" is spelled wrong because she's so ignorant.
Well, people
zing, Sydney. That was awesome, right?
Fun, right?
Well, I go. Side note: I go to St. John's so often that sometimes I get a friends and family discount there.
Okay.
But I mean, Betsy DeVos. She's totally unqualified. She's a public figure. Fair game. I don't know.
Fair game.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to go back to that money discussion, if you realize, you know, something like 22 of the senators who voted to support her had contributions from her. I don't know. People are kind of upset about it. Sandwich boards don't, I mean, they don't foster civility in this case, but they're pretty harmless in general, don't you think?
Betsy DeVos is a billionaire and could have spent the last 25 years sitting on a beach. Hell, she could have owned the beach. Instead, she spent all that time and more helping underprivileged kids, impoverished kids get better schooling by supporting charter schools and school choice so that poor parents have the kind of options that suburban parents have. For that, she's been maligned because who hates charter schools and private school choice? Teacher unions. And who basically owns the Democrats? The teacher unions. That's what was behind this entire campaign against Betsy DeVos.
Listen, as we wrap up the Week in Review, I'm going to bring us all together under the snow that we all experienced. How'd you do in the snow this week, team?
I worked, but I also found out that if you very lightly pack fresh snow and then pour some whiskey on it and just take a big bite out of it, it can dull some inner pain.
Can we all come together over whiskey snowballs?
Yeah.
Yes, unity.
How about you? It was pretty, right?
I thought it was beautiful. I live on the top of a hill, so my snow sticks around longer than perhaps some other folks. I thought it was beautiful. Liked it.
I ran out and played.
Yeah.
I mean, first time we've had snow like this in, what, 5 years, you guys?
Yeah. So ask Greg Nichols. He knows when the last time we had a lot of snow.
I threw a snowball at my son, and he stood up on the floor and said, "We are lacking civility these days when we cannot go outside in the snow without it becoming going down somebody's pants."
See you in court.
I censured him. Yeah, see you in court. I tweeted him.
Be nicer to Ivanka.
I tweeted him.
I lost my power for almost 3 days, and it was still beautiful. And I find all of you beautiful. And thank you for coming here on KOW's Week in Review. We couldn't say that with a straight face.
Kumbaya, Bill. Kumbaya.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Bill.
Joni Balter, host of Civic Cocktail on Seattle Channel. Sydney Brownstone, reporter at The Stranger. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Carlson, now go to KVI and talk on out of the right side of your mouth and come back again.
Drive, radio program of record, Bill.
Indeed. We're live tweeting our programs at KUOW. Thank you for tuning in today.
Thanks, Joni. Thanks, Sydney.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.